Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host, Kelly Wells. Do I sound a tiny bit livelier, less lively than usual? That should be the case. I have uvulitis. It is, I explain it to people as your own mouth trying to kill you. That stupid thing that hangs in the back of your mouth grows until it chokes you, and sometimes you can't breathe. And you basically have to try to swallow it all day because your tongue will assume that you're trying to cough it out. It is worse than it sounds, and it sounds really terrible. The only thing you're not really supposed to do when you have uvulitis is talk. And here I am. So I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games. I will try to keep stuff relatively short because this is difficult, but we're in a two-man booth, and this is what we got. So, Bruce, let's talk main event, and then we will go to our two phone calls. Main event was Wes Lee defending the North American Championship against Carmelo Hayes, a match that went exactly 13 minutes. It was a good one, folks. We knew it would be, and just the kind of match that I'm just so annoyed has to be split up by a commercial. I get it. You can maybe keep more eyeballs on at that time, but man, just a few exceptions every now and then. And this one for me could really have been an exception because these two guys actually went out and killed it out there. I was trying to say, actually. So anyway, Wes Lee, still your champion, defends against Carmelo Hayes, but is immediately blindsided by Dijak. He does not have a first name. This is a guy who's gone through many permutations of nearly the exact same name. And apparently was being tried and workshopped as Donovan Dijak, but now he showed up. And he's just plain Dijak. So so we got a real Vince-ism going on here, a last name only. And it's not one that sounds particularly cool, I don't think. So really would have taken the Donovan Dijak, whatever. He's got the leather jacket. He's got, are they aviators? I don't know the relative differences between sunglasses. Is he Top Gun?
He looks
just
like
a
it.
Big dude? Yeah, he was... He was Top Gun. So, he'll be coming at Wes Lee in the biggest size mismatch that I think probably has just about ever hit the North American Championship. But that was your main event today. And I hope that's the longest I talk at one time, Bruce.
Yeah. Talking about the commercial for me watching on the network player, the USA network player, I don't even get the split screen. So, it's even worse because I just miss everything. And so I come back and I'm not as invested in the match because I'm a little more cold because I have no idea what's been going on. And I know it's a little harder to keep track during the split screen anyway, but for those of us who are watching, so it's weird because last week during the two title matches, the men's NXT and the women's NXT championship matches, they didn't actually cut away from the split screen. They let us see the split screen, which kind of made me mad for recap purposes, but that was there, but not tonight for this title match. And not concerning, but disappointing because, as you said, it just hurts the – regardless, a commercial break hurts the flow. But if you're able to see a little bit of it, it at least makes up for not having everything right there for your full attention. But not being able to see any of it really just makes it even more – like I said, it made it real hard to get back into the match once they got, not just because it wasn't a bad match, but emotionally it wasn't as investing as if there wasn't a commercial break there, because I'm sure what they did during the commercial break meant a lot to the story they told during the match. Now, to Dijak, I thought I heard Vic say Donovan Dijak, but maybe I was just wishing that. Because I'm pretty sure they're going to go with the name he used in Ring of Honor, which is Donovan Dijak, which helps out in terms of more of his mannerisms and things kind of go with that as opposed to this kind of Croatian American badass. I think he was Croatian, coming off as Croatian or Czech. Maybe Czech. I don't remember. One of the two. And size mismatch. I think you could look at Adam Cole and Keith Lee, but that's a size mismatch in a different way. And then I just don't know if you debut Dijak like this, if that means, I mean, how do you debut him and not have him go over Wesley at deadline, I'm assuming, when it does happen?
I think the only way is it can be screwy. Like, maybe there's a roll-up or maybe there's something screwy here at the end, but how do you do that putting the baby face over? Because it feels like he should be transitioning to Breaker.
I guess it depends on if Hayes and Williams are done with Lee or not, because that could be, I guess that could be the mechanism by which you have that happen so that the title isn't lost clean and still protects Lee without taking away or detracting from winning. But yeah, it's, Lee seems like he's the Sami Zayn type where it's more about the journey in the eyes of the bookers than it is about the actual title reign. And, you know, at least he got the title reign and a title defense to make it seem more legitimate, especially since he was able to defend against the person who's basically defined this title the last year, especially this 2.0 class. Ever since the departure of the Lees and the Coles and people like that, he's the one who defined that title. So, yeah, a great match, commercial breaks aside. And I guess make sure that Dijak starts off next week cutting a promo explaining exactly why he attacked Lee when his vignettes made it seem like he was coming after Breaker.
Yeah, that was odd, and that's why I thought maybe this is a red herring and he's going to transition. Or maybe he's just attacking Wesley and he doesn't actually have any plan to be going after Wesley. This is a message to Bron Breakker, but he could not send that directly because Bron was off catching fish. So so there you go. We are going to go to our first caller, that being Ryan in Cumberland. And Ryan, let's see, I think it's – okay. Slow switchboard today, but I think we got him. If you're there, what do you have for us today?
My first question on the schism and the sacrifice angle that they did tonight. I thought that guy looked a lot like Sam Adonis. I don't think it was him. Does Corey Graves have like a better brother, or do you know the identity of that person?
Yeah, I don't think he's got any siblings in the business. I don't know who this guy was. He looked mildly familiar to me, also to the point where I feel like maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm going to kick myself for not knowing who this is a little bit later. But I mean, all I know right now is he was that overacting guy out of the audience, pointing to himself, going, "Me? Yeah, you don't have to point." When me can only refer to one person. Don't have to do that in acting. But they do what they do. Since we're here, let's talk about this segment. I don't know what this segment does other than to teach us that the Schism are heels, guys. They're bad guys. I don't know what more there is to this. They did give Ariana Grace a little more mic time. She is not great, but
do you mean Ava Rain?
I do, and I typed Ariana Grace twice in the recap, so I'm going to go ahead and fix that while you talk about this segment.
Yeah, one thing I noticed and I tweeted about was the sudden change in Ava Rain's demeanor and look as she hugged the dude as he was about to be sacrificed, how she just went from the smiling girl to the one who has a vindictive look on her face, like he's about to commit, well, about to sacrifice you, I guess. So I think that was well done. I don't, I just feel like their promos draw me in and leave me with any desire to want to hear them continue to talk. So I don't think that's good for them. I did notice that Gacy stopped his, he stopped doing his promo when the crowd started chanting sacrifice, because I think he's like, they're signaling it already. Like they're ruining it right now, but they worked through it. And the dude kind of looked to me like, every kind of like European gangster extra you might see on a cop show or something. So, beyond that, I don't know. I think Ava Rain is still the assignment of this group, but I just don't know how much more this group, like I said last week, like they had the most boring match, the Dyad, that I can remember watching in a long time. And I just don't know how much this group is actually willing to do for her. And yeah, I guess all we learned from this angle is that they're not accepting anyone anymore. They're complete, and anyone who tries to get in their way or join them is willing to suffer the same fate as this dude to be sacrificed.
Yeah, from the beginning here, it's five chairs, and all of them have people in it but the one in the middle. And the fact that Gacy wasn't in the middle, I was just like, I can already tell you how this ends. It was a long trudge to get somewhere that we knew we were going. And yeah, these don't make me want to see them lose wrestling matches, so I don't know what the hell they're good for.
Oh, well.
Ryan, what else do you have?
I have a question on Scripps that made his debut tonight. How long it's going to take before the announcers or Scripps himself admits that he's Reggie, because the crowd was really chanting loud, and I don't think there's any way around, you know, trying to hide that fact from us.
I don't think that they will. I think that they will let this die, and eventually audiences will stop calling attention to it, because by the end of the match, Scripps did kind of have them drawn in with like, oh, I didn't know that this guy could do all that stuff. So I don't know. I'm not expecting them to have any kind of acknowledgement of this unless they feel the need to bring him out from under the mask. By the way, I don't know what I think of this mask. I'm going to need some time to turn this mask over in my head. I am going to cautiously state that I don't believe that they will acknowledge that this is him at all. But if it becomes impossible to ignore those chants, maybe they'll say, yeah, we know who this is, but he wanted a fresh start. And maybe they don't say his name, but they say, but this is the fresh start. This is who he really is. That wouldn't prize me entirely, Bruce.
Yeah. Let me just say that with how the vignettes are going, I just thought it would be a white dude because of all the anarchy stuff. So kudos to them for going against stereotype here. but beyond that, this looked like they were trying to have someone, like someone was playing an RPG, like something like Horizon or Skyrim or Elder Scrolls in general, whatever. And then they saw some of the armor that the guards might wear, and they tried to make a cloth version out of it, which just didn't look that great. And I think the colors are brown and orange, which that's an interesting color combo if you're not a Cleveland Browns fan. So I'm not really sure how to take it. Reggie did what he really did when he was on Raw and whatnot. His finisher was just a top rope version of what he did in the ring, which he used to do a running, basically the running flipping senton, seated senton thing, and he just did that from the top rope today. So I think they were, you know, the crowd was oohed by his athleticism, because I think it's been so long for them that they didn't that, you know, it kind of caught me by surprise that it was Reggie, just because, again, I didn't expect it to be a black dude for one. I expected it to be a white dude. But I don't think the character they had us kind of imagining through the vignettes was what was represented in the ring tonight. So I think that is kind of where I'm at right now, is how much of the character are they going to make connect to the in-ring stuff? Because right now, I think we're supposed to kind of look at him as an anti-hero or something. But
yeah, is this like a wrestling Banksy? I don't know what this is.
Or like the V for Vendetta guy.
Sure.
Yeah, again, it doesn't really match the in-ring, so I want to see how that develops, and what is his first promo going to be like? Where does he even speak? Are they going to pull a Sting from what, 97, something like that, 98? I'm really not sure what to make of it right now. I think we need it's the cliche wait and see with WWE, but really with this, again, I think the fact that there's such a divergence in the characters' presentation and then what they do in the ring, I need more time.
Yeah, and really the only thing he's doing with this is he's writing in the air, like he's just like mimicking writing, which I think once of that in a match is plenty, and he did it about 10 to 12 times. It was a lot. And just needs to be – we see that a lot with these guys who find their new characters, and they overdo these spots. And it's like you shouldn't overdo those, just like you shouldn't repeat a big spot in a match, because it starts to feel a little samey. So, Ryan, what else do you have?
I have a question on that Zoe Stark matchup. I know Booker T made a very weird comparison to Zoe, saying – he was using a Scott Steiner analogy, which I thought was a little bit odd, but at the house show I went to on Sunday, they even showed Scott Steiner a clip. I guess it was like one of the top shocking moments of Survivor Series, his return of him beating up Chris Nowitzki and Matt Hardy. Is there any chance he could be like maybe a surprise entrant in the Rumble, since I know he still wrestles on the Independent Circuit? I think he did a match against Jerry Lawler not too long ago.
You know, I can't say no to that one outright. I wouldn't be surprised. It would seem like he's worked with Triple H. We know that. They had one of the worst pay-per-view matches you'll ever see. with Booker, it seems like Booker just wants to bring Scott up all the time. I mean, that was like his defining feud at the end of WCW. It was the defining feud at the end of WCW. It was really all they had going for them. I mean, they had like Young Dragons and Three Count, but like at the top of the card, that's really all they had left was Booker and Scotty. So Booker brings them up. Booker likes to live in the past a little bit at times. So he did a lot of that. He might've also had Scotty on the brain just because, they had just watched Braun Breaker go fishing, which is something I didn't think I'd be saying tonight, but I am indeed saying it. So Scott being a Royal Rumble participant, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I've been more surprised before. But when you've got a really big roster, and it is kind of a big roster again, how many of those guys do you want to annoy by burning one of those spots? But as a fan, those are some of what you really, really remember when the Royal Rumble happens. So I don't know. I used to hate those stunt spots when it could have gone to somebody who's there all the time, but I've made my peace with them. Bruce.
So to be clear, the comparison to Scott Steiner was in response to a question that Vic asked about someone's disposition changed so dramatically, how she was such a bubbly babyface and all of a sudden she's just this really trying to be this badass heel. And he said Scott Steiner would turn on a dime and whatnot. And I said, why are you asking Booker this? He thought he was an English king for how long, you know, with an accent and everything. Talk about having a sudden change. But I, you know, being in the Royal Rumble possibility, I think it's more likely that we might see him at Deadline. We've already seen Rick Steiner as part of some of Braun Breaker's big matches. I think this might be a good way, and that could be a good that could be their test to see the response, and if that's someone they want to have as a legend entrant in the Rumble. I'd rather not see him in the Rumble, like you said, give the spot to someone else. I think it would be better spent having that spot, because it at least gets their name in the eyes of the fans who aren't watching NXT and gets more of the NXT name out there. But definitely, you know, if Triple H sees money in it, he's going to do it. He has good relations with a lot of the people. Even when he had bad relations, he's someone who's known to bury the hatchet if they can make money. So I could definitely see Scott Steiner as a Royal Rumble entrant, but I think it's more likely that we'll see him first at Deadline.
Okay, and I guess, you know, that was probably the best opening we'll have to talk about Zoe Stark and Sol Ruka. Sol Ruka still no wins, and nothing close to a win. So, but 4:17, probably her longest match. So I guess there's that. Ryan, if you got one more, go ahead.
Question on Sol Ruka. Is there anyone else on these college athletes that you can see being brought up and being like a regular like her, or that's a long way from happening? What have you heard on these seems like almost 100 prospects that they've signed recently?
Yeah, it seems like those are the ones you really have to ease on to TV, because if you go out recruiting, you probably know that a lot of these people aren't going to be TV ready quickly. But then you go out and you get sprinter and multi-sport star Bianca Blair, and you bring her up, and she takes to it like a horse to water. So every now and then you get lucky and you find a Kurt Angle in there who just knows how to do it. But yeah, I would hope that there's an abundance of caution with which ones they want to really speed to TV, Bruce.
Yeah, I can't say too much, because I haven't looked into the classes as much as Tom has. The names I do know of, besides, you know, I think Valerie Laredo is in her own little class, because she was legitimately a professional mixed martial artist. But some of these college athletes, I think, is it the Cavender twins? Or the Cavendish twins, one of the two? I think they have as much potential as anybody, just based off of their personalities and charisma alone, and they're very great basketball players. I believe there was one or two that Tom was talking to us in the DMs about last week. I think because maybe they're on as bodyguards or something, that he seems pretty high on. But aside from that, I really don't know. I think someone like Damon Kemp is probably the best they can hope for right now in terms of who they signed. And if that's the case, that's good. You need people to fill out the roster and be in certain spots. And he's growing and developing, so I don't think there are any other names I can think of. And Sol Ruka, when they showed that video of her calling out Zoe Stark, it was so low energy. Just, I know she's a surfer girl, but there was no energy in that video. And then,
yeah, she didn't get away with it as being like surfer laid back. It just came off as genuine disinterest.
Yes, it was very just, I felt bored watching it as she was doing it. I felt as bored watching it as she seemed to be recording it. And in the match, I mean, one, you know, she's not going to, even if it's one of those surprise, you know, Rock versus Hurricane things, we know it's not going to be Sol Ruka versus Zoe Stark this early in Sol Ruka's development. But even then, I said this before, but I know they want to get in there and do what they do what they know how to do well, but I think it was best to focus on doing the fundamentals in front of the live crowd and on TV rather than trying to get what you think you do well off first, because I think that'll be the quickest way for them to actually develop and then be able to do what they want to do in a match as much as they want to. So, you know, kudos to Zoe Stark here. I guess the one thing else I'll say is the Nikita Lyons has new gear. I don't know if it's better, but it's new gear. So there's that.
It is undeniably better. Because
well, it's better,
not,
but I don't know if it's good. I should say that.
I'm not sure if it's good, but it's so much better that I don't care that it's not perfect. like, she doesn't look like it's all fallen apart and she forgot half of it. And it's not a specific half. It's just parts. It's just panels. I don't know what it was trying to accomplish. I genuinely... But that's not what they're doing. And she got away with being on, like, at one point she was on 3 out of 4 straight segments, and she's wearing different stuff in all of them, and I'm just thinking back to the Poochie episode of The Simpsons, where he's always there, but if he's not there, everybody should be talking about him, asking where's Poochie. I didn't know that I was going to have to recap that tonight, but she was there.
Katie Carter called her a badass, which... That is, I guess, in the eye of the beholder.
That is patently false. thank you, Ryan. As always, we are going to go to Darrell over in Georgia. Darrell, good to hear from you. I'm sorry again for being low energy, but...
Sol Ruka energy.
Yeah. It's my voice done Sol Ruka'd me. That's the situation I'm in. What's up, Darrell?
How you doing? And you got more energy than most parts in that show that we just watched. So,
yeah, it was a little bit listless. I don't know what it was. It didn't come together tonight. Yeah, Thea Hale was she was all up in our business.
Yeah. My first question I want to ask you guys, and I know last week I talked about I didn't like the matchup. Where are they going to do it at deadline? So how did you guys like the two vignettes, for one for Apollo Crews and the other one for Bron? I guess trying to make him more personable or whatever on the fishing boat. How did you guys feel about those two segments? Because I don't think they worked either, but how did you guys think?
I thought they were both a mixed bag. With Bron, it's weird, and I've been joking about it throughout, but I actually see on paper how they really like this idea that that Bron really is just a dude out there, and he's got the same frailties as all of us, and he's got to blow off steam somehow. And when he goes fishing, he doesn't have to be Bron the Superman. And this is the kind of thing that wrestling used to really not do. And it would keep – and the idea was that there was this superstar aura that was there at all times. But it just doesn't work that way anymore. So I understand them trying to bring a level of humanity to him, especially when there's a lot of people just – and the talking point about Bron is – there's something that just isn't connecting. Like, as hard as they're pushing him, there's something that's just not happening. And as I've said on this show, I sometimes have to remind myself who the champion is. That's how I feel about Bron. So I don't know. I thought that it was fine. I thought that he was reasonably decent in his delivery. It didn't pop for me. It didn't turn me around huge on the guy or anything, but it made me at least think, gosh, there's something there. I do kind of wish that he had fished out two dimes, that he had caught two dimes. You know, the guy who used to be in D'Angelo's group, but unfortunately he did not. He simply caught a fish. Apollo Crews, I thought that was fine. All of his segments kind of come off the same to me. I think that there's some decent, like, every one of them feels like it could be the same opening scene to an action movie. And it's the scene that is, it's the exposition scene that tells you, this is who I am, this is what I can do, and I see these visions of the future. And every one of them kind of feels samey. And I don't want them to, because I feel like these guys are going to put together a match that we're all going to be surprised in a way that we probably shouldn't be. I think that this can really, really deliver well. And I want to be more excited about it, but Braun, the super babyface who keeps us at bay versus another babyface, I don't know. And I also, I don't yet buy that Apollo has any chance to win this match. And he probably does have a chance, but I don't buy it yet. And I think that's why some of these segments are falling flat, Bruce.
The crew segments, yeah, they just seem to be redundant at this point because it's a lot of the same journaling while in a diner or some kind of place like that segment. And it just seems like a lot of fluffy words right now. The match will be fine because while we have our reservations about Breaker because there's always a certain match type he does and a certain moves he'll do, he's in there with Apollo Crews who, if they let him just go, he can really go. So I think the match is going to do just fine. I don't, like I said last week when it kind of became official with that locker room segment, he's not the person that should be the one to take the title off Breaker. He's not someone who I think has been built up enough to be considered as the top act division on the show or have kind of the I don't even think that Apollo Crews is on in terms of kind of the title level. Look at the potential that a Grayson Waller would be at this point, even though I don't think Grayson Waller should be the one to win or to take the title off Breaker. I'm just trying to make a comparison point. And with that, they're going to have to do a lot in the next few weeks to get people like you and me to believe that he actually has a chance, whether that's getting the best of him on promo segments and using spine games or physically attacking him. And, you know, if you wanted to make him the heel in the going into the match, you could have him do some backstage attacks or some sneak attacks from behind, something like that. The 2 weeks heading into the deadline, you could have put him through tables or the announce table or something. That could help. I just don't see – it's like watching the matches this week and last week, there's no 0% chance of anything going the way you don't expect it to. So yeah, Breaker should probably not come out of this as the winner. I think I said last week that I see him entering the Rumble as the NXT champion, entering the Rumble match as NXT champion. But then again, we stand and deliver right before, they might use that night as a chance to take the title off of him and then debut him in the Rumble match and save him for kind of the Raw after Mania. We'll see. But I think that's kind of what I see happening going into an after deadline between these two. Oh, and then the other vignette, which now I'm suddenly forgetting what it was.
Braun Breaker fishing.
Oh, Braun Breaker fishing. Yeah. So I said that this is the most character development by far we've seen for Braun Breaker. It's not just him yelling and screaming and being about, I outwork and I do all that, because every wrestler talks about I work harder and all that. To kind of counter a bit, I know a lot of dudes who just like get out there and like to fish. So I guess in a way that's relatable. But this is the stuff they should have done a year ago instead of right now.
Yep, and even out there, like out there casting, he still just looks like a great big meathead. Like I don't know what to say. He still just doesn't look like a guy you'd hang out with. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Darrell, go ahead.
Yes. I feel like they should have did that a year ago as well. This would have been a great way to build up and add more story to him, since I think he has had no story to me. But outside of that, I found the segment between Chase U pretty silly, and it got me a little interested in seeing where they're gonna be going with this, with Duke and all of that, and the match they had with Pretty Deadly was pretty good too. Brought a little energy back into the show at the time when they sure needed it right before the title match, the big main event. how did you guys like that segment? What did you guys think about this, and where is it going?
Yeah, it's probably a little criminal that Chase U versus Pretty Deadly and the internal issues of Chase U are genuinely more gripping than the championship storyline on this show. I thought that their segment getting into this was fun. I thought the segment with Duke running up to Andre Chase, being out of breath and like explaining this to him, and then the unseen guy going, "That's great, Mr. Chase. Mario, what the f- are you still doing here?" I thought that it was just magical, all of it, and the right kind of silliness. It's not a top of the card act. I understand that, but it's a lot of fun. My wife has been watching with me a lot, and Thea Hale and Pretty Deadly are her two favorite acts. They just make her smile so much. So it was really, really, it was funny though. Today she said, "So are Pretty Deadly bad guys?" And I'm like, "Well, yeah." And she goes, "They don't really do anything bad." I'm like, "No, they're just cocky." And in her mind, like, cocky guys are not the bad guys, because she did marry one. So she doesn't necessarily see how that just makes somebody bad outright. But yeah, she was in heaven here, because they were all on screen at the same time in this match. 11 minutes and 49 seconds. Pretty Deadly, of course, are still your champions. Afterwards, Chase U walks out dejected after obviously some miscommunication with Andre Chase, playing probably the intended part of Bodie Hayward in this storyline. But Bodie got let go for reasons beyond just wrestling. But yeah, I don't know how else to say it other than this is quite a bit more interesting to me than what's happening at the top, Bruce.
Yeah, I do like how this is all set up. I like how these segments in NXT have had through lines, and they're not just one-off segments for the most part. You still have your one-off segments because you do need to have those. But I like how this one was set up, and there were two or three segments leading into the actual title match. And so that was, I think, a good thing, because it kept the importance of what was happening between them in the eyes and the minds of the viewers, which is something that you should always be doing, in my opinion. So that was good. We speculated when this pairing first happened with Duke Hudson going to Chase U, and when Bodie was still there, of course, if Duke was there to play some kind of, I don't know, inner saboteur, I guess, kind of the mole from the inside. And if he is doing that, I think he's playing his part really well, because he's picking spots that are generally things that you would expect someone to do. Like when he went over to check on Thea Hale after Elton Prince accidentally knocked her over with the shoulder tackle coming outside, right? Or when he tried to help out and then was sent outside and was held up while Andre Chase was the one that took the pin. But then he does things like tagging Andre Chase when Chase is still trying to recover from the extended beatdown he took, which makes you think that, okay, it keeps making you wonder if he actually is or isn't doing this on purpose or not. And I think that little wrinkle is a good thing here. Duke Hudson, before all this, we had talked about how, you know, he's the guy who lost a squash championship match to Bron Breakker. And we talked about how he's a perfect person, or at least I did, that he's someone, a perfect person for that, to be in that kind of spot, because while he does have the size and he does have, I guess, acumen in a certain sense, he wasn't really billed yet as someone you would take that seriously in terms of taking Bron Breakker to the limit, even just taking Bron Breakker to a decent match or a decent length match, I should say. But now with this Chase U thing, I think it breathes new life into his character. He seems to have found a new pep. The pairing, for some reason, there's been this chemistry, even though Thea Hale always, in the beginning, she was acting as if she was wary and hesitant of him, which should have been. And now that chemistry since then has built really well. And I think like you said, they're one of the things you look forward to watching. You always look forward to watching Chase U, but I think this dynamic between the three of them and this potential angle of Hudson upending Chase U is something to watch out for. But I also noticed that after the match, when they're walking out, Andre Chase looked like he was glaring the hell out of Duke Hudson, the back of Duke Hudson's head. So keep that in mind. Just in case it does happen, keep that in mind.
Yeah. I think it's possible they pull the switcheroony on us here, and it's Chase who goes heel. And that's where he was at first. And I could genuinely see that's where this goes, because that's where he did. He didn't really change who he was when he became face. They just started booking him against heels. Like, he acts exactly the same. He just happens to be a babyface now, because they couldn't ignore that people just found the tirades and the act funny. All right, Darrell, go ahead.
Okay. Now, my next question is going to be, it's a general question, and it's like a two-parter. Starting off the show, they brought out Toxic Attraction. I guess they're going back after the tag team titles. I don't know how I feel about that. I don't know if I really want them to go after the tag team titles. And right now, that act is real cold, real cold. And they started off the show real cold. I guess that's why I didn't have the energy for probably an hour and 30 minutes of the show. But with that being said, what do y'all guys think about that? And also, should NXT now be like on Peacock, on the Cock, on the network itself, and not on main TV? Because that's the kind of show I'm starting to fear that it is right now. More of something that should be on the Peacock than on national television. What do you guys think?
It should never have been on USA in the first place.
Exactly right. Exactly right. This is something that got moved because they saw the potential for ratings. I understand that. But when you do that, you have to change what the show is in ways that make it not feel developmental anymore. Now they're trying to toe the line between developmental and an actual brand that matters. And I think that's really, really hard to do. And they have to explain away these ratings. And it's like, people know this is a developmental show and it has to be that. And people know that. And a lot of people aren't going to watch because they see it perhaps correctly as minor league, because it's a feeder system. And some people just won't make time for it. And I understand that, as interesting as it is to me to see development of these workers. So, I don't think it should have moved in the first place. I'd love to see this back on Peacock, except for the fact that Bruce and I recap it. And it's nice to have six or seven commercial breaks throughout the show. It would be difficult if we were doing this show live and no longer had that. So, but in a vacuum, yes, that's where this show should be. Absolutely. And then I'd feel like I was getting a little more use out of my Peacock subscription, because I'm not using it a lot. And then the opening segment with Toxic Attraction, I don't quite want to say if you've seen one, you've seen them all, but I don't have another way to end this sentence. Mandy's out there doing the same stuff, obvious heel stuff, like I did it all by myself, my girls weren't there, then pretending not to know who Isla Dawn is. That was probably the best touch of it, when Caden Carter said it was just because of Isla Dawn. Obviously, the money line here was when they said the personality is not the only thing that's fake about Mandy Rose. And Mandy goes, hey, that's probably the best thing that happened here. JC Jane still comes off as pretty amateur in a lot of ways. Like, I hate to say this, but she is light years ahead of where she was. When she had her first vignette, I said to my wife, I was like, that's the worst thing I've seen on wrestling television maybe ever. Now, there was a lot of bad stuff in the 80s. There really was. And I watched some pretty low-budget programs at the time. any given episode of the Memphis stuff is pretty bad. But I thought that her attempt at mic time, which is the first thing they gave her, was like the worst thing I'd ever seen. And she's miles ahead of that, but it just still feels so laborious. I still like Gigi the best, even though she didn't really pop tonight. And I don't know, the segment felt shiftless and overlong. And by the time this segment was over, it was 12 minutes past the hour. And I just thought, did this really warrant that? Did enough information come out to warrant this? Because it's just Mandy Rose saying, I want to see who wins this match, which, by the way, was the perfect time for the announcers kind of to tell us, remind us, this is a weird match concept. And they got to sell the hell out of it and tell people about it. And they did not remind the audience what the match is. They just said the name of it, which makes it sound bonkers and stupid, even though I'm pretty intrigued by it. And then all the rest of it was to set up a tag match that we have seen. So, yeah, I don't need Gigi and JC in the tag team title picture anymore. On one hand, who else? And on the other hand, just get this act to the main roster or fire them all, because it's just they're just treading water and kind of clogging up the women's division. And it feels like some of these women have to try to hold a championship to see what they do carrying a belt. And some of them can, I think, and some of them should not. But we got to see what we got. Bruce.
Yeah. Kaylee Ray, Alba Fire taking them out before the match they had last week in the Iron Woman match. And your belief that she was the one that was going to win it, to me, was a perfect time to write them off of NXT and save them for a Rumble debut or something like that, right? A surprise tag team championship open challenge match or something. But, of course, that didn't happen. And they're here. And it feels like they're really only going back to them because they haven't done a good enough job of building up other women's tag teams on the show. And the only other one they did have, they imploded last week. So, yeah. I'm still wondering why the hell Sonya Deville even came down for those 2 weeks. Just because maybe just because Mandy Rose wasn't there. But they kind of never really close up that loophole with her, in my opinion. But I feel like there's still a lot they could do with Sonya Deville in NXT with Mandy Rose, or maybe they move this on to SmackDown or Raw, wherever Sonya Deville is right now. I think SmackDown, but JC Jane is hard. Her promo this week and then last week or 2 weeks ago, and think about spending $4,000 at the mall, Mall of America, for as Kelly, probably at the Mall of America with Kelly getting lost and everything. So, you know, I think she is going to have a hard time if they do go on to Raw or SmackDown with some of the crowds, because she is obviously the weakest link of the three. Gigi Dolin, even if sometimes her promos aren't the best, they're much better, and she has a lot more charisma personality that comes through that doesn't feel as forced as JC James. Of course, Mandy Rose, people already know her, so she has the name value to the people on Raw and SmackDown. But yeah, the six-woman tag team match next week, I think it's really just going to be an angle to further the Stark Alliance thing more than anything else. And I hate the fact that NXT has so many matches that are really just angles instead of just having matches that should themselves work to further the angle. You know, it's okay to get a clean win and have a clean loss. Put over the... You can build the feud that way. You don't have to always have some sort of shenanigans involved. But regardless, I can't say that I'm that interested in this six-woman scenario, but that is where we are. It's just, again, it's the North American Championship, the mid-tier championship, carrying the weight. And some of the mid-card acts that are carrying the weight of the show right now instead of the top-tier acts, which it says a good thing about your depth, But at the same time, you can say, while it's good to have depth, you still need to have some star power. And right now, I think that is being overshadowed by those who are on the mid and lower card, which I don't think is what you want to have heading into your last event, your last big event of the year.
Yeah, I just want to see Creeds versus Indushare. Whatever's going on with the...
Speaking of the Creeds, though, why the hell are they interrupting Ivy Nile's spotlight? They're definitely teasing. They're definitely going towards some kind of breakup.
Yeah. And Ivy was... Well, we'll get to that. Better not step on Darrell's last item in case it's that. Darrell, go ahead.
The Creeds are the only people who I think should be called up right now. They're the more interesting team. And I think... They're not going on a breakup. I think they're gonna go on a they're gonna finally listen to Ivy, because I think she's trying to get them back focused, and having them lose the end of the year would help get them back focused on the task at hand, because that's what they need to get, and that'll be very important. I like that they challenge end of the year for deadline. I think that's going to be one of the matches to watch, to make you want to watch that PLE right there. And outside of that, Bruce, I know you're saying somebody debuting. I don't think you can debut any act for NXT in the Rumble, because I don't think they'd get a pop enough, or it'll be almost a waste of spot, because I don't see nothing that you can do with somebody at this moment. But that right there, and my last
never
thing
stopped them in the Rumbles before.
yeah, but they got a lot of depth this year. If you look at it, they got a whole lot of depth, and they still talking about bringing back more people. So you have to see with that. But my last thing would be this as well, with talking about the Creeds, which I think they were one of the top tier champions in NXT history. I know some people were saying, like, when it was Bo, when Bo was champion, like, he might was the weakest. But right now, looking at everything, the two main champions now, to me, probably be the weakest NXT champions of all time. And I'm even going back to Bo Dallas Dave, all the way when it was really developmental, even Big E Rain, all that. I'm talking about the Hulu days and all of that. When I was staying in Florida at the time, it was a Sunshine Network. It used to come on before Hulu, so they tell you how long I was watching it. Where do you guys rank these two champions? I know, Kelly, you say you forget who champion right now, and that's a big part of it. And I still say they're the two weakest champions. And this, you could tell that for this whole year why they starting to go back down. But where would you rate them, and who would be considered like your top three champions in NXT history?
I don't think that Mandy's the bottom champion. She's definitely one of the lesser wrestlers ever to hold the championship. But I think the worst all around champion was Raquel. The main point of NXT is development, and she was about as good as she is now when she got to NXT. She has gotten better in so few ways. I am amazed that she even made the main roster. I just think that she brings so little to the table, other than the fact that she is big. She would be my choice for worst. Mandy got to a point where there's like this tipping point in the length of the, like, it almost makes it seem like it's a better reign just because it's been so long. And she is effectively getting you to want to see her get beat. I think that some of what she's doing is decent heel shtick, and that part of it is working. So I find it hard. It's just tough when you know when the matches come around. There's no real chance for an all-time great match. Like, no matter who she's facing, you're not going to get one of the all-time great matches. We're not going to have any Asuka stuff in there. We won't have any Bailey or Sasha stuff in there as when they were champions. With Braun, I think you've got more room to say he might be the worst champion.
He's not.
He's probably not, but I don't know who I'm for. I don't know.
Karrion Kross.
Yeah. But I thought there was some, I thought there was like a genuine scary factor to him. And I thought the booking kind of made
it now says no, or says, well, says probably says, you know, more than you want to say that, you know?
Yeah. And you knew the matches would all be bad. And that was frustrating. You do really kind of need to be able to go if you're going to carry. And the other thing I noticed was all of his championship matches were shorter than the ones that had come before them. And I think there were some good wrestlers who had really underwhelming reigns, like Finn Balor had two different reigns. And I'd say his first one was actually especially flat, partially from lack of real challenges and things like that. I think there have been a decent amount of men's runs that were not much. Seth was the first champion, and he almost immediately got called up and started doing double duty, and he changed his gimmick while he was champion. So it was really weird. So he had to job as a, and actually that happened to Big E too, where he was a babyface in NXT, defending as a babyface, but working as a heel on the main roster as a lackey for Dolph Ziggler. So it was this really weird, unfocused presentation. Going back and seeing some of those things and knowing what was going on in the timeline is a little bit odd, because the announcers are kind of trying to be apologetic for what's happening on the main roster. They're basically coming out and saying, listen, he's a face tonight. Just let it go, guys. It's you just got to trust us with this, because this is where he loses. But I don't know. I think that this is probably the worst extended period of the two champions that there has been, like the two taken as a pair. I'm very, very surprised that this many months later, we are still talking about both of these two as the two champions.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't a big fan of Finn Balor's reigns in general, but the first one for sure. You said there's some underwhelming reigns, you know, like Samoa Joe's last one was really cut out from him because of the COVID or injury, whichever one he had to be stripped. I just never got it to Karrion Kross. You know, he didn't even defend that much because he got injured too in that match with Keith Lee, I believe. But he, that second title reign was very lackluster for Kross, in my opinion. And then you can quibble with what you think about Robert Roode or Bobby Roode, but during his reign, he was a really good champion and a good act, regardless of what you might think of him as a wrestler. I'd say that I think 2022 is probably the weakest year for the men's championship, with Breaker, and then Ziggler, I think, is the other person you could put up here as having just a bad reign, and then Breaker again. So it's, the legacy of the men's title, I think, has taken a dive this year. But then when you look at the women's title, sure, Mandy Rose, not someone you'd expect. But then, as you were saying about Raquel, we said that she kind of plateaued when she hit the championship level, and it's kind of been that same amount that she's been since that time. And that, I think, is probably a worse reign. I think because, you know, I'll keep saying this too, regardless of how her matches have come out, some have been decent, some have been bad, she has won most of her matches clean with her finisher. Most, not all. And I think it doesn't help that the last two title matches she hasn't won clean. Then again, one was a gimmick match, so it's hard to win clean there. But she has, for the most part, been a champion that she hasn't backed down from any challenge, as far as I can remember. She's faced everyone who's come after her, and she's won. So I think that works in her favor. I think the one other reign you could put here that is in the underwhelming category is Charlotte Flair's second reign after she beat Rhea Ripley at WrestleMania when Ripley won the Royal Rumble, I believe, and then challenged, or Charlotte won the Rumble and challenged Rhea Ripley for the title. Because I don't remember much of that time of reign at all. I think what I remember the most is Io Shirai jumping off the set and in your house onto her and onto Ripley and Flair. Yeah. But beyond that, I don't remember Flair's title reign at all. So for me, I think you could put Flair in the same, kind of the same boat as Gonzalez, but I think I would put Rose ahead of both of those two. And then on the men's side, I say Karrion Kross is below Breaker, and I think Balor is just ahead of Breaker, but that's not by much.
All right. We thank you, Darrell, as always. Let us go to the last couple of matches. I'm going to try to keep it short here because my voice is not holding up for much longer here. Ivy Nile defeated Kiana James by 442. I will say this was surprisingly decent. I think this is one of those matches that had unfortunate, real dud potential. I think Ivy's been fine in there. But it seems like a weird time to ask her to carry someone, and Kiana's had some real clunkers. But this, I felt like the transitions were fine. It didn't, they weren't out there. They didn't get a lot of time, 442. But I thought that this was pretty fine. Ivy Nile wins, even though this is about Kiana James moving on to a feud with Fallon Henley. So surprised at how many people lose to move their feuds forward, but whatever. The first match was Cora Jade going over Wendy Chu in 909. And as in the other match, this match was not about the winner. It was about the loser. So Wendy Chu just straight up cried after the match. The moment of sadness was undercut a bit by the fact that she had a large false eyelash under her left eye. But and then Vic wondered aloud, what is going on with Wendy Chu? What is this moment of real emotion? What are we going to get here? Because it just seems like, Wendy Chu came out there at first with like the dumbest gimmick I've ever seen. It was just absolute trash, just worthless, inarguable garbage. And then they found a way to tweak it and not kill everything they had come up with and actually get to a character that was fun. And, in a way, a little heelish, but, as long as when they kept it whimsical and silly and did things like that, she wasn't necessarily turning off lights and beating people with bats, which is not so much whimsical as criminal, then I thought it was really working. And it just seems like it's been cooled off, and maybe that's because Wendy has lost all of her big feud matches in the end. I can't think of the last one she really won, but they clearly remain invested in her because they closed in tight on her when she was crying after that match. And it just seems like this is about to go somewhere interesting, but I cannot guess where at all. Those are the only two matches we didn't cover.
Is she just Stratton?
Actually, maybe.
Is that how they wrote Stratton off TV for surgery?
Yeah, I think that is true. I think she maybe beat Stratton in that match. And that was really fun because, storyline-wise, that match was exactly what it should have been. Inoffe and Blade ran afoul of Von Wagner, and Von Wagner got the heel heat of the night by ripping up Malik Blade's sweater. He literally had the biggest heel heat of the night that I heard. Charlie Dempsey put over the fact that he is, he's old school and he doesn't like all these flashy folks. That's pretty much it. There was a segment of the ladies doing some stupid stuff on TikTok, but I would feel dumber even talking about it. Bruce, go ahead.
Yeah, when you asked us in the DM to explain what happened there, and I explained that you said you felt dumber for having to read through that, and it was a chore to even read through the description I sent you, which was about three lines long on a Twitter DM, so not very long at all. So that just gives you an idea of what that segment was like. So The other thing about the 1-2 Cora Jade matches, I swear I saw the ref kick out two large hair extensions that fell out from somebody during the match. I think so. I could be wrong, but I swear there was something like that on the mat, and he just kicked it out. Cora Jade, I don't know. I'm still waiting for. I know a couple weeks ago or something I said it's starting to click, but it's kind of reverting back to not again. And she needs something more than I'm the bad girl who carries a black kendo stick around and I use it. And I think there needs to be more to her character development than that. And for 1-2, I think this is how they're going to try and signal a character change for her, which we thought was coming not too long ago. I can't remember exactly why, but I think they signaled it. So I think now we're getting the designation of her getting some kind of shift because it's just not working right now, right? The Ivy Nile thing, I really just, that Dragon Slayer submission she does, it just looks so, it doesn't just look dope. It looks so disrespectful how she just clasps her hands behind her back as she's choking you out with your neck underneath her arm. It just looks so casual. You know, like she's just so casually destroying you. It's just, and so, again, the big thing I'm concerned about here is the Creed brothers interrupting her and really just stepping all over her, not listening to a word she has to say, and using that time of hers to go after Indu Share. Conspicuous by their absence tonight, I might add it, Indu Share. And then the TikTok thing, it was really more just a way to keep setting up the Indy Hartwell, Roxanne Perez situation, their match, I think, which is next week. And then during the Inoue, Blade, and Von Wagner segment, I thought this was how they were going to set up what I said last week, and that's put Idris Inoue into that deadline match, get him some of that pop so people can see the potential of him as a single superstar. But he tore the sweater vest of a man who told him how much it means to him because of his late father. I think this is setting up for a Malik Blade singles run and possibly Malik Blade defeats Von Wagner next week. And that is how he's announced as one of the five entrants into this Iron Survival Challenge. Sorry. Kind of upset that they're just having an announcement and not having qualifying matches. I think that would have been the best way to go, but maybe they just don't trust their depth enough to have 10 singles matches to determine the 10 competitors for each side of the bracket. If I did my math, I can't do math, but you know what I'm trying to say. So
I
yeah.
Okay. You nailed it eventually.
Yeah. There we go. I think that's going to happen here. Dempsey seems like he's going to be a lock for that match as well. And I think that is everything. Yeah, just we speculated last week on who it might be, Nate and myself. So after another week and watching tonight, who do you think are going to be the five in the match for each side of the match, I guess?
Dante Chen.
And that's exactly what we said first last week, but.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know how you keep both Axiom and Nathan Fraser out of this match. And I don't.
Well, Axiom's hurt, quote unquote.
Right. I don't think they win. And is it maybe unnecessary to have Nathan Fraser in this match? They're both for the main championships, right?
Like the main title match, yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, it seems so easy, but do you still have Dragunov up there? Do you still have JD up there? Or have you moved on from those guys? You need, I think, a mix of guys who were just there so you have that main event feel, unless you really just want to do a sweep of guys that haven't been in the main event and do that. I would say one of the Creeds could show up if they weren't already going to be in a match with Indu Share. I just don't know how they're going to approach these.
That's true.
It's really easy to say it's going to be the ones that have been pushed at the top the most, but it really could be some folks that that haven't been there. I'd like to see Tyler Bate in it. I wouldn't be shocked if we saw Blair Davenport re-show up, although is she hurt as well?
I know Bate and Dragunov, they keep saying, are hurt on TV.
Okay.
Yeah, so they, you know, Big Body Hobby last week and this week was all about calling them out, but Mackenzie keeps telling him like, they're hurt, they're rehabbing and whatnot. She's great. Mackenzie Mitchell's great.
Yeah, she had to carry Hobby when that mm-hmm. segment was dying on the vine. Yikes.
I do think that Carmelo Hayes, after tonight, is cleared up to be in that match.
Yep.
And I think he should be in that match.
I'm going to say Odyssey Jones also. I think that segment was to get to Odyssey Jones versus Von Wagner, not either of those guys versus Von Wagner. Although he could roll through one of those guys first before Odyssey takes him out.
That's true.
So there you go. And I guess Von could be in that match. I mean, you have Kane, so you can put him in every single match of that type. That's the reason you have Kane. So you might as well get a jump on that. And do the same thing with Von Snitsky. So that, I believe, is that. And then we've got an email here from Kevin Catani. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. I apologize in advance for my late email. We were celebrating my brother's birthday this evening. So it looks like WWE has refilled the superhero quota with the introduction of Scripps. Any idea if Nikki Cross gave him her customer's number? Smile emoji. Other than a cheap jab at a very talented performer, I wanted to center my question today on how you'd assess the state of NXT as we near the end of the calendar year. I'm sad that War Games, in William Regal voice, oh, sorry, War Games, is no longer an NXT show, but I'm excited to see how their new PLE goes. Thanks, as always, for your thoughts. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. The professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. I'm sad that they made these changes also, and part of that is because I really, really like Survivor Series matches, and I don't want them gone. Mm-hmm. And I understand why on the main roster you would only want one or the other, even if they're at different times of year. It just seems like you kind of have to build to them the same way, and it's difficult to build to a 5-versus-5 match without it seeming contrived. You've got to invest a lot of time, and that's a difficult thing to do to make it seem like these teams should really be teams without just throwing together matches, which, by the way, is fine. Like, if you just throw 4-versus-4 together, there are some pretty good Survivor Series matches out there that had little to no build. That, like, we got to the show and was like, oh, I guess this is one of the matches that they're going to be putting on. I would have preferred to keep that in NXT as well. And a big part of that is because that some of the best storytelling we saw, particularly in the women's division, was in those War Games matches. With the men, it just seemed they're like, go out there and have an awesome match, and it doesn't matter if you tell a story at all. With the women, some of the very best storylines they ever put together culminated in they either started or ended at War Games. So cool stuff there. I miss that. And I don't know. And just kind of in a traditional sense, it bums me out that we seemingly have lost two things rather than gained one. That's really my take on what's going on this season. So that is my answer to Mr. Catani, and it feels like you feel the same.
Well, I mean, Rhea Ripley's ascent to dethroning Shayna Baszler all began really at that War Games match they had 2 months before her eventual dethroning. So, I mean, that's one of those things. And you just think about Io Shirai and those two matches she was in, and just how she kind of was, she had the memorable moments, but she was also the one that kind of, in my opinion, kind of kept everything together with her energy and her abilities during those matches. And like you said, the men's matches tend to be more spot festy, which was fine. I think about the one with Undisputed Era and the Viking Raiders, and I think they were with DIY. I think that War Games match, that was a really fun match. They've all been fun, but like we discussed last week too, NXT is the new proving ground for gimmick matches or new match types within WWE. We saw that with the Fight Pit moving up to Extreme Rules, and we're seeing that with War Games moving to Survivor Series. I wouldn't be surprised if the Iron Survivor Series challenge not only works well but is received well, that it also moves up to replace sort of the championship scramble sort of match on Raw and SmackDown, which we haven't actually seen in a long time. But it is a bit disappointing for those who have been around since the beginning of War Games in NXT, since those who saw both Fight Pit matches in NXT, to see them move, because what we saw in the Fight Pit at Extreme Rules doesn't give me much hope that what we see with War Games at Survivor Series is going to reach the level that we expected from the NXT versions of these matches. The Fight Pit at Extreme Rules seemed to be a much more sanitized version of what we saw with Timothy Thatcher and Matt Riddle and Timothy Thatcher and Tommaso Ciampa. I hope they just let them go out there and do what they want to do in that match, because there have been many memorable scenes from those War Games matches that people still tweet about, talk about, think about. And I just wonder if they're going to allow that to happen with, especially with the Bloodline match, because of the people that are involved. But I think at least that means that us as NXT watchers and fans can look forward to seeing different match types on the show. Some are going to do better than others, but we'll be the first ones to get to see them, essentially.
All right, folks, I do believe that is our show. That was NXT for November the 22nd of 22. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games, Bruce.
I'm Bruce Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253. And, hey, I joined Hive. It's B_Lee253 with no underscore. So, yeah, you can check me out there if I ever log back in to accept anything. So, yeah, see ya.
Cool. I'm going to drink all the water in the world. Cheers, folks. Okie dokie.
I'm glad you said water because I thought it was going to be something else.
No, that's part of why I'm in this mess. Alcoholism plays a role in this. And I mean, I wish that was funnier to me, but I
can't. The tone you said it in was just a bit.
And, you know, I do say it in a funny way, and I do that on purpose. And I don't know if that does me good to joke about it, or it like genuinely staunches my ability to beat it back, because I'm always just fucking joking about it. But it's like, I'm not hungover, and I never felt hungover, but what happens with my throat, like when you're an alcoholic, like everything, you look for a million reasons why it could have been something else. Like, was I allergic to something last night? After eating cheese every day of my life, did I somehow become allergic to cheese? And it could be that, even though, like, in my head, it's like, it's the drinking. It's obviously the drinking.
That's like me in these spots. Like, what changed recently? And it's nothing besides being stressed out, really. So, yeah, no, I get it. Rest up, heal mm-hmm. up, drink a lot of water, drink some tea. Thanks for toughing it out tonight.
Yeah, just what a perfect storm of shit. And I knew it was going to be tough on my voice, but yeah, it really was.
Yeah, so. I will learn from Nate soon so that if I have to go solo, I can do that.
Sounds good, man.
All right. Have a good night. Well, rest up.
Yes, indeed. Talk soon.
All right.
Bye.